Welcome to the Ages of Rock podcast with your hosts, Bill Algy, Dennis Talbot, and Alan Tate. We are three guys who have one thing in common, a love of rock and roll. Our goal is to talk about all things rock. We hope you find this show intriguing, funny, and occasionally highly opinionated. Enjoy.
Hey, folks, this is episode number 361 of the Ages of Rock podcast. I got it right this week. I didn't try to steal the show. And anyway, this week we have Erica and Chip and what's the guy's name with the pretty black hair?
Steve.
Yeah, his name is not on the screen. So they are from the band Seems Like Tuesday, and they're going to tell us all about themselves. How y'all doing?
Hi.
Good.
How are you?
Thank you for having us. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. You were referred by some great people.
Yeah.
Likewise.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
Yeah.
Her is one of our good friends. So spoke very highly of you guys.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, wow. We had a lot of fun with those guys.
Yeah, yeah, now we got to send them our hush money.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a quarter. We're going to send them in their royalties for 5 yeah. million downloads. They get a 25 cent.
We pay 10
to showbiz.
We pay, I think we pay what, 10 times what Spotify pays. So we're good.
So we pay .0017 instead of .00017.
Yeah, you got it.
And I seen a thing with all them statistics. Man, that's depressing.
It is crazy.
I just saw that the other day. Yeah, that's ridiculous, actually.
Yeah, it's horrible.
It's like if you think you're going to make money, you better think otherwise, you know? That was a shot in the gut. I didn't know it was that bad until I seen that. It's worse than I actually thought, which was probably as bad as I could possibly imagine. So,
Yeah, the managers of the 60s and 70s that stole all the big rock stars' money, they had nothing on these guys.
No. Yeah, like,
No kidding.
What was it like? What was Elvis's manager's name?
Colonel Tom.
Yeah, or Peter Grant from Led Zeppelin. Them guys look like choir boys compared to what they're doing now, you know? But what are you going to do? It's part of the business, I guess, that we're in. We just got to do what you can do, I guess.
It's an ugly thing.
So anyway, tell us about Seems Like Tuesday.
Sure, go ahead.
I was going to say, you put all of this together.
Okay.
So, by the way, if you haven't realized, we're husband and wife. So we do play in multiple bands together. We're very professional. It's not what you think. So we're good. But he actually put this together. So
Erica and I are still in a cover band currently for I've been in there for 10 years and she's been in there for what, 15?
Going on 17.
Going on 17, my fault. It's a band called The Business in the Philly area, Delaware, Jersey, like tri-state area. We do all the casinos, weddings, you name bigger clubs like privates. It's a big band, 11 pieces, horn section, couple singers. Yeah, it's a big deal. So we were doing that for a long time, and I was just like, look, you know, this is great and it pays the bills and, you know, it's lucrative and we're making, you know, good contacts and everything, but we gotta do something for ourselves. I come from the original background. Until I joined this band, I was like, I got to play what I want to play. Now I got to, you know, kind of do what comes natural. And I want to write my own stuff again. So I said, well, let's put a band together. And, you know, our major focus was to get people together that had their situation together. We wanted people that had their life together. We didn't want no Mickey Mouse, no drama, no drugs, no fighting. And it's easier said than done, but I think we actually got that, believe it or not. So the first phone call I made was to Chip, the guy that's on the screen right there. We were in a band called Cyanide Saints before. In fact, Albert Lepore from Monte Carlo was the singer for that band. So we had a good working relationship in that band. And so he was the first call I made. Then we made another call to our guitar player, Pete McGregor. And then we wanted to get another singer. We wanted a male and female vocalist. We wanted a kind of like a Fleetwood Mac or a Jefferson Airplane, like where there's two voices going back and forth. And then we found the perfect guy, this guy named Billy Zeoli. He's a good writer, a good guitar player, a good singer. And that finalized the band. We came up with the name, wrote a bunch of original tunes, start recording them. And that's where we're at this point. So that's pretty much the history of it.
So how long of a time frame, over what time frame did all that develop?
We were together exactly a year. August 9th was our.
Oh, so it's pretty new stuff then.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. We did a lot in a little bit of time, to be honest with you. We signed with a recording studio around here. And as soon as we got enough tunes, we thought that we're good. We went into do pre-production with our producer, Tony Mecca. And then he hooked us up with Cambridge Sound Studios in Philadelphia, which is a very, you know, well-known recording studio around here. So we start working with this guy named Jim Salamone, and we start recording our demo. So we actually released three songs with three videos, and our fourth song is actually getting mixed as we're speaking right now. And he'll send us the mix. We'll critique it, go back and forth. So that ought to be out in probably 2-3 weeks, something like that. That'll be our fourth song. We're going to wrap all that up and put an EP out. So that's our plan with that.
So that's in the meantime, for the EP, are you releasing these as singles or video singles or lyric videos?
Yeah, we did. Every song we had, we released with a video. So this one coming up will be the fourth one that we're doing. But yeah, all three songs so far has had videos and been released and been on YouTube and the Facebook thing. And then, you know, tell them about the big records thing, because I'm all the talking.
Our partnership. Okay. So we did sign a partnership deal with a label out of Canada, pretty much helping us kind of navigate how to get more gigs, try to play in different areas. So we're working with a couple guys now trying to really play. They're very big on the festival scene, but big festivals, like 10,000 people festivals. So we're really trying to work on getting our foot in the door that way. So I've been meeting a lot with probably two or three of their folks to work on specific gigs for next year. So my fingers are crossed, our fingers are crossed. I mean, that's kind of where we want to be at the moment. I mean, there's only so many dive bars we can play.
You figure you can't make no money, you might as well play in front of a big crowd.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I can dig that.
Yeah. Hey,
not a bad gig. You know, if you can play in front of 10,000 people as opposed to 150 people.
Yeah, I'm down.
Or two or three, which I've done.
Two or three. Yeah, that's really bad. Actually, I think I was at one of Dennis's shows where I think I was the third person, and then I left.
You're playing in front of 10,000 people at a penny a shot. That's $100.
Yeah,
that's right.
It's that Spotify thing. You know,
it's
you
still more than Spotify. Still more than Spotify. Yeah.
That's no. Scary.
I did go on to
taxes on that too.
Yeah. No, no, whenever Alan sent me the bio from you guys, I went on to YouTube and I've watched The Beautiful Day for a Broken Heart, yes. Lies and Alibis, and then of course Looking for a Heartbreak. I really like your music because it's one of those things where usually we get a band on here that they're going like the real heavy extreme or they're going some kind of just kind of off the other edge of it. You guys are real middle ground. That's one thing. There's not a lot of music being made now that's like your music. It's kind of reminiscent of, I was trying to think of somebody that you sound like, but I can't quite place it, but I enjoy the music. It's just something to really sit and listen to and enjoy. It's not in your face, you know,
right,
just blasting you.
Yeah.
You don't have to really think about it. You just enjoy it.
That's the best compliment I think we've ever gotten. It's like, I can't put my finger on it, but you guys sound great. So we don't sound like anybody,
right?
So we're not trying to be anybody, and that's a good thing. That's what we've always wanted to do. You know, we've got, you know, the first song that we came out with was Looking for a Heartbreak. And that almost, you know, it's a rock song, but there's this almost this adult contemporary feel behind it.
Exactly.
And so to follow that up, we put up Beautiful Day for a Broken Heart, which has its roots in an R&B kind of a feel. And then we turn around with Lies and Alibis, and that's just straight ahead rock. You know, now we've got this next one coming up, and it's more of a ballad that almost has, I don't want to say country, but it was like an Eagles feel to it.
Sure, country rock or kind of every song
seems to have its own.
You can say it, Tip. It's okay.
I can't say the word.
You can say it. You know, I don't want to say like we all cringe when people say that, because that's not the case at all. But we do come across a lot of people telling us that it's actually three things. So it's rock, pop, and country. So that has been an ongoing, you know, part of our feedback.
We're getting airplay on that one.
I think the countryside of it is really not. Is really newer country stuff. It doesn't sound like, you know, like 80s, you know, 70s country. Not that at all.
It's Johnny Cash kind of
more in with, James. Yeah, not that crap. No.
All right.
Yeah.
Or not crap, but not that stuff.
Keith Urban kind of.
Yeah. More that, you know, middle line, you know, kind of, you know, right there between country and pop kind of thing and stuff like that. Not pop, but rock stuff kind of stuff. It's pretty popular right now. So, hey, well, if it's popular, jump on the wagon, man. Yeah, wagon's not going to be around long.
I'm glad that you guys say that, because one of the things also, when I had this vision of what I wanted this to be like, I come from a very heavy background, playing like a lot of heavy metal stuff and all. And I was like, my first thing coming out of the gate was, I was like, I don't want to be a heavy metal band. I want to appeal to the masses. You know, I want to have some edge, but I don't want to be too heavy. I don't want to, you know, like, I don't want these crazy riffs. I just want to write really good songs, concentrate on key changes and modulations and like harmonies and having two voices go back and forth and tell the story. And so if I'm accomplishing that, that's great to hear, because I definitely set out. I think right off the bat, I was like, I don't want to be like in a metal band. I just don't want to do that anymore. It just limits your audience and everybody. Yeah. Yeah, I'd rather have edges, like a little bit of feel of that, but without being labeled that.
And also, you know, your songs are, they're not, like you said, they're not metal, but they are a good rock song, but they're also radio. I think they're radio friendly. You know, they could be definitely picked up. They're very catchy. And the other thing I was going to say real quick too, was listening to your voice, Erica, it seems like every woman that goes and sings in a band, they try to sound like somebody else. And that's another thing that I was noticing about your voice is I can't peg it. I cannot peg it. And it's unique. And I like that. And that's what makes the song sound really cool.
So thanks. I appreciate that.
You did a good job on that.
Thank you. Yeah. I come from, really like an R&B soul type background.
Right.
You know, a lot of this was out of my, I don't want to say it was out of my comfort zone.
Wheelhouse?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a good word. Mm-hmm. But I'm definitely doing my thing. I enjoy it.
I took her over to the dark side a little bit. we always say, like, when people ask us, like, what do you guys sound like? And I'm like, that's so hard to say, because our influences vary. There's five people in this band. We all write lyrics. We all write music. We all contribute to everything that gets put out. It's a democracy across the board. So it's very hard to say, you know, what does that sound like? But I always say we have a soul singer singing for a rock band. That's pretty much what I think sound.
That's pretty close. That really is. That's a good way to put it. But it's good.
And
that's
what Eric is singing. And what Billy's singing, he's got a little bit more of a rock edge. But like, we have to play covers in some of the places we play just to get into the club. Like, we'll do like It's Only Love, like Tina Turner and Bryan Adams. That's we play that song. It sounds like us playing that song. Like, it's like tailor made for the way both our singers sing. Yeah. So
you make it your own too. You know,
it's funny. It's funny you mentioned that's one of my favorite Bryan Adams songs, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Chip, really, what do you say all the time? Chip, you say our own version, or I forget what you say about when we do covers.
We make it our own. We take somebody else's song and we don't change it. We just, we put it in our pocket and we walk home with it. It's ours. When we play it, it's not what they did. It's just enough us that it's not the original cover. So we're not covering songs. We're basically remaking them.
Right.
In their own.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And, you know, I can understand that because, you know, I played in a cover band for 8 years and we were playing, you know, all these songs for years. Well, we were going to do a reunion show and I'm sitting there and I'm going back listening to the real songs, thinking about how we played them. I'm not going, we fucking completely changed these songs and played it. And they were great songs, but they're nothing like that. It's like, I wish we had a tape of all the stuff we did, because if I relearn them, I'm going to be relearning them wrong from what we did. Right. Cause you do, you make them your own. That's the whole point, but they still sound great.
The first cover that we ever did as a band that we still do is Because the Night by Patti Smith.
Oh yeah.
And we don't have a piano in it. We play it with guitars. The second guitar, when it comes in, it's doing tapping and some really crazy stuff. Erica's voice is Erica's voice. And then in the middle of the song, we just say, we don't like this key. Let's step up a key. So we jump up a full step. And it has slowly evolved into our own interpretation of what Bruce Springsteen wrote 10,000 years ago.
Wow. That's really cool.
It's pretty cool. Yeah.
So are those available in video? I mean, are you on your YouTube channel? Can you guys find some of that stuff?
I think there's a side view of All Fired Up by Pat Benatar.
Mm-hmm. That on there, but we did upload, I think it was from the Berlin, our big Berlin gig that we just
did. There's a bit in peace.
I was just looking at this. There's a Berlin brewery company.
Yeah, there's three different,
Yeah, there's songs. Little, like, I guess, in snippets of like parts that people, and we just threw them
on your, that's on your YouTube channel right now. I just had it pulled up. So I hadn't watched that one yet because I just got through the main videos. But
well, like there's one on there from a club somebody did, like our friend did on the side of the stage. And you could just basically hear stage volume, but it's All Fired Up by Pat Benatar. And we play that song, but like we give it a little kick in its ass. Like we speed it up a little bit. So it kind of, it's a little bit more edgy than the way they do it, musically at least, you know.
Cool. I'll have to check that one out too.
So going back to your original songs, the three songs that you have written and released so far, is there a story behind each song or are you just really good songwriters? or a little bit of both?
There's stories. Well, let me say this and then I'll leave it up to them two, to the other two people in the band to explain. When we put out this this EP, it's actually all the songs that have been released are telling a story. So at the end of this whole thing, it's a story. It's going to wrap up to an ending, but this is a conceptual EP that we're putting together. And every song we released is going to tie into each other. That's the best way I could explain it. You want to go for Looking for a Heartbreak first? Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, okay. The female wanted out of the relationship, and that surprisingly was actually written by our lead male singer and guitarist, Billy Zioli. So everybody's surprised every time I get done singing. They're like, oh my God, that song is so great. When did you write that? And I'm like, that wasn't me. That was Billy.
Yeah.
So he actually texted me before he sent me that song to review and learn. And then we would do it at rehearsal. And he said, I found my inner woman, just so you know.
I am like, woman, hear me roar.
This is great. This is frigging great.
I guess if you're married long enough, you get some of them characteristics in your personality. How do I get
it
along?
Happens.
Okay, that's how I think.
So, but it's pretty much just the female wanting out of the relationship. She's looking for a heartbreak. And then
I'll take Beautiful.
Okay.
Then Beautiful Day for a Broken Heart is basically she knows what's coming. Okay. And she can't get out of the relationship, whether it be financial or the will, or she doesn't want to change her lifestyle or whatever. But she knows, like, it's going to be a massive task to get away from this. But it's going to be a beautiful day once she gets the, I guess, the balls or the mustard, I guess, to do it. She wants to get out. So it's going to be how can you have a beautiful day if you have a broken heart? Well, she really wants to get out. Like, so when he breaks up with her, it's kind of like he's doing her a favor, kind of a thing. Then there's I'll leave the last one to Chip. Then there's a song called Lies and Alibis, to where then they're broken up and she realizes, like, they both realizes they were lying to each other. It was like, just, you know, where were you? I wasn't there, kind of. And there's like an argument back and forth between the two singers in that song. And then go ahead, Chip, tell the last September
song. The last song is actually a song that Billy brought into the band fully fleshed out, and we took it, we hacked it up, we trimmed it, we did our own things to it, and it doesn't hardly even resemble the song he brought us. Mm-hmm. But the story is, this is the guy in the relationship realizing what he lost by not trying as hard as he could. He lost the one thing that he ever really wanted, and he didn't know it until it was gone.
Interesting.
So basically the whole EP concept is about the ups and downs of a relationship, pretty much. But all the songs were released in synchronicity with that ending in mind of the fourth song, wrapping up, put a bow on it, and telling the whole entire story. So if you listen to them in succession, they will make sense. But it's not like so conceptual that it can't make sense on its own, which was also on purpose. You know, what's that?
They each tell their story. Yeah. But when you put them all together in the proper order, they tell the full story.
Sure.
Right. That's pretty much what all the songs are about.
That's our winded explanation.
That's a very long explanation.
So what's the order?
Looking for a heartbreak. First, beautiful day for a broken heart. Second, thirds, lies and alibis. And then fourth will be the song called September Skies.
So beautiful day for, no, that's the, so the first one is Looking for a Heartbreak.
Yes.
Okay. So it's, I gotta go 1, 2. Okay. I'm going to listen to it in that succession.
Oh no. Dennis is going to have to count.
No, I went to the wrong. Well, I went through the wrong succession. In order.
He's not so. Very good at that.
We actually, well, I mean, them that way. So they ended up like telling us, you know, by the time you get the fourth one, you heard the other three, and then it'll all make sense at the end. But again, they could just be released as singles too. It's just something that we started and we were like, wow, it'd be cool to do this. And then it would be cool to do that. And then it was like, you know what? These make sense together. And let's, you know, so it was written to be conceptual, but also to be released as singles without being so tied together.
Right.
Yeah.
So now go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I don't think we'll ever release another song without a video, because the single and videos have been.
Yeah, we think that's pretty much like I always say. I have a quote. I always say people listen with their eyes. You know, like if you're on stage, you're just going through motions. People read that. If you see a guy and a girl out to dinner and they're fighting or they're both on their phones, you could see they don't have a connection. It doesn't take a blind man to see certain things. So I think that. That's another thing that we wanted to come across. We wanted to make it like it was everything that we do is kind of special. And right, what are you laughing about?
Because it's true.
Okay, yeah. So, guys,
the thing is, though, too, you guys are not the first people that come on here and said that. You know, people like, instead of, you know, spending all this money and making a record for people that have a attention span of about 3 minutes, you know, why not put these things out in pieces, give them a video, give them, you know, and then once you get them hooked, then you can do this stuff. But a band starting out to make a whole record and then throwing it out there, it gets missed. I mean, it goes over the head of all these young people.
Well, our French band just put out an album and it's a good record. I mean, you listen to the whole thing. You have a big release party, you do all these things, and then that's it. So I'd rather be relevant and come at you every 2 to 3 months than hit you with a big flash and then you forget me by Wednesday. This way I stay relevant in your life.
There's a song title right there, Forget Me by Wednesday.
There you go. Well, we can always use this and remember it. Yeah.
Bill, you should have just saved that for me. I like
you should write that down. I want my penny, damn it.
I want to use that.
We're always doing that. Whenever somebody says something, we're like, yeah. Oh shit, that is no, you really need to write that down. We were sitting in a meeting one night and somebody texted us so we didn't forget.
I probably have 100 song ideas in my notepad app on my phone.
Yeah.
That I start deal. And then never finish.
Yeah.
So one-liners.
Speaking of starting and finishing, you said you were working on the final song for this EP. Do you have an estimate of when that song is going to be done? And two, do you have a tentative release date for the entire EP?
Okay, I would say the second week in October, everything should be done. It's getting mixed now, but depending on how much we keep going back and forth with them, would be the telltale with that. So I'd say second week in October, the song should be out. We're actually going to start the video very soon while it's getting mixed. So when we have the video, we could just sync it up because it was all done on the click track and all that stuff. So we could just sync it up once we're done. So we'll probably do the video to the rough track and then to get the mixed version and just put it on. So kill two birds with one stone while we're waiting. So that'll be mid-October probably. And then hopefully we try to get this thing out by Christmas. If not, because there's so many things and variables involved, if we can't get it out by Christmas, then we'll wait probably until the end of January and let everybody rebound from Christmas and then, you know, get their finances back together and all that kind of stuff before we start, you know, breaking their balls to buy an EP. So I would say before Christmas or late January, depending on, you know, our producer and everything. I know he travels all over the place. So a lot of it's just scheduling, not desire. It's scheduling with the studio is where we have to wait our turn because it's so busy.
So they're all going to be virtual or are you going to be having CDs to actual?
I'm old school. I like a physical copy. So I know we're going to do some of them.
Right.
I'm
really old school because Bill and I, we like vinyl, but
that's talking about making vinyl. Cassettes and eight tracks, man. He's talking about old school eight tracks.
I use those. I just don't have them anymore.
I would love to do vinyl, but it's going to be so expensive. So I mean, we'll probably do a physical CD copy. Cassettes. I mean, that's been in the talk. just to give somebody something tangible, sure.
I like tangible. I like to hold it in my hand.
Yeah, I like to read it. I like, you know, it's good toilet read when you go take a shit or something. You sit there and read the inner. It's always good to have. You know, put somebody in a special thanks.
Chances are I'll burn it onto my computer and then put it on my phone and then I'll listen off my phone and my iPad for the rest of the time. But I do like having the physical. And like you said, just to read the inner notes and the liner and to see. And I like the artwork, you know, of course, CDs, I have to put my glasses on, you know, that's why I like albums because it's big.
The font's bigger because now we're old and shit and you can't see, you can't read it. So
that's very true.
The honest to God's truth.
These are readers and they're threes, I think. Because
these are readers and they're whatever they are because they're on my face all the time.
Just by like talking to people though, like, you know, so many people are. Like you guys have a podcast and there's so many, you know, different musicians and all. There's a lot of people who really like music and aren't just like, I like that song. I'm going to go download that song. There's a lot of really deep music fans and they're the ones that are going to buy the CD, you know? And if you like the one song, then go, you know, go download it somewhere. But for the true music fans, I think you got to give them something. That's what I believe. Yeah. I'd rather buy somebody's album than I just feel like I'm cheating the artist if I'm doing it the other way. I don't know why. I just feel that way.
I use Spotify and all that, those other services, but I always buy the physical thing first.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I've got albums I bought I haven't even opened because I haven't had time to get them on the turntable. but I've listened to them 10 times on Spotify. So I paid for it, and they actually get another like 3 cents.
Yeah.
Every time. So listen to it 18 times.
Chip, what were you getting ready to say?
I was going to say, there's still a lot of collectors out there. They want to have the physical copy because it goes into their collection. And, you know, it's an old school kind of a thing. But when you download something, what do you get? You get those 3 minutes, but you don't get something that you can, you know, you can collect.
Something physical.
Something real. It's virtual. That means that it's not real. My kids used to play video games with all sorts of people, but they were online. They were virtual. So they were imaginary friends.
Yep.
Right.
That's how the world works these days. That's for sure.
Yeah.
So Erica, before we get off here, I know you guys probably have some time stuff going on, but you know, I sent you a question earlier. So a friend of mine emailed me earlier today and said that, sent me an excerpt from an article an interview that Gene Simmons did back a couple of years ago. And it was really just about, you know, so it really starts out here. There's not going to be another Beatles, Hendrix, or Kiss because there's no longer the record industry. There's only chaos. And then he kind of left some other comments about, you know, the next 15-year-old kid who plugs in the Marshall amplifier won't be able to make a living because the record companies don't pay advances, royalties, or promotion stuff anymore. And so I had sent that to Erica just to kind of get her idea, you know, being in a band that's, you know, been together for just a couple of years now. You know, what are your thoughts about that?
So for me, I'm going to go to the digital world of things. You could, if you have 3 million followers, that's it. You have it made. You're going to get famous. You're going to do this. You're going to do that. Technically, you don't need a record label anymore. Just from what I see, from everything my kids tell me, look at this person. This person made it. She put herself all over TikTok. Like, she didn't have to get signed by anybody. You know, they're always bringing that stuff to me. So that, to me, the whole digital world, I just feel like you're able to make it without having to sign with anybody. You're pretty much, if you have this many followers or this many hits on a video, or, you know, you pretty much, you can get somewhere.
But how do you get there? How do people get engaged with bands that they've not seen or don't know or don't, because they're not on the radio, right? Most of those bands are not on the radio, so.
You're probably better off doing like some TikTok gimmicky thing and somebody see it, really, than put out, you know, we're sitting there stressing about like every chord and how are we going to do this harmony and you sing this fifth and all this stuff. And then some guy just puts up some bullshit on TikTok and he's famous.
He farts and he's like got a million.
I think your question, I think I would answer that as far as like, there's so many bands that I didn't discover until their third or fourth record. Mm-hmm. And you don't have four records to do it. You got probably less than a song. You probably get a verse and a chorus to get somebody's attention. And if you don't, you're probably just going to go. And like the record industry is terrible now. I mean, with the 360 deals, I mean, they're taking a piece of everything. Mm-hmm. It's like you might as well put out your own record and do your own promotion and do some stupid video on TikTok. And hopefully somebody picks you up that way or do a dance to something. I mean, you seem like you have to have some sort of gimmick, which I'm totally against. But like that thing seems to be working for people better than putting all these hours in your craft and coming up with the best demo and doing all these things. You just got to either find a crack, have a gimmick, or know somebody. And if it was, those are the three things. I mean, I think they could get you to the next level, because if today's world, if anybody thinks they're going to put out an album and the record industry is going to give you 2, 3, 4, 5 cracks at it.
No,
they're not.
No,
you're going to be a tax write-off.
Yeah.
I think the thing is, and Chip, I know you were going to say something. There's just so many different outlets today.
Right.
As far as
for sure.
Platforms. And I mean, you don't have to be you know, partnered with anybody, you could just share.
I think it's a lot easier now to get the masses to listen to your stuff because you have all the different avenues. You have Facebook, you have this, you have that. I mean, I remember when I was in bands in like, you know, the late 80s, early 90s, I mean, I would get the flyer and we go to the concert, you know,
they hand out cassettes.
And we put it on everybody's window wiper. You know what I mean? That's how you promote it. Now you can just put it up on Facebook. You know how many people are coming to your gig. You know, it's a push of a button and you can hit everybody. So I think that in one way, the industry really is better as far as getting your stuff out because there's so many different avenues. There's podcasts. Right. There's all kinds of different avenues to get your stuff listened to. And then on the other hand, once you get there, you ain't making not a third of the money them other guys used to make. So you can get popular, but you're not making any cash. That's pretty much where we're at this point. And it's a sad thing to say because you should get paid for your craft. I'm a quality control manager where I work, and I get paid for what I do there. Musically, I can do a very good job and you can like my stuff and I won't get any money. It's kind of, you know, fruitless, to be honest with you. But we don't do it for that reason. We do it just to create and to maybe find that little shooting star somewhere, I guess. But it isn't for money. It's for that I just want people to like my stuff. That's where I'm coming from. I know we all feel the same. We wouldn't be doing this if it was for cash.
Yeah. You know, the same thing is, too, about, you know, the record labels themselves. Instead of, you know, sending people out, PR people, and finding these bands and then coddling them and giving them money and doing all this stuff, they wait till you do it yourself, spend all the time, do all the social networking. And then if you hit it big, they're knocking on your door going, hey, come on in. It's like going, no, we did this work. We're going to do it ourselves. You know, we don't need you. And it's one of those two way streets. You know, it's like going, you know, they've messed up and now, you know, but like I said, I guess if they want to get real big, they throw a bunch of zeros at you. And then it's like, okay, but you're doing the work.
So Chip, what were you going to say, Chip?
Well, I was going to say the pop music industry is still a viable record industry. What they do is exactly that. They go and they search TikTok and they search all these social media places until they find somebody that's starting to blow up.
Yep.
Then they take them and they're not really a record company like they were back in the day. They're more management and guides. It's like, okay, you're making this. You've gotten up to 100,000 followers. You're starting to get paid by TikTok so they can advertise during your songs, which is terrific, but you can make a lot more money if we could stick you in the studio, have some of our writers put together a couple more songs for you and put you out on tour, because tour is where the money is. I used to go to see concerts for $7. I saw Heart and Aerosmith together for $7.50.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, you can't even pull into the parking lot for less than $25.
That's true. You know?
And then the ticket, $200, $300, $400, $500. My daughter saved up for weeks. She's 22 years old. She saved up for weeks to go see a K-pop band. Now, it was a good deal because it was a 4-hour concert, but it was $700 a ticket.
Wow. That's crazy.
That's where the money comes from. The money doesn't come from the album sales anymore. The album sales are like what their t-shirt merch used to be. Instead of t-shirt merch, now it's a freaking store on the internet that you can buy anything from them. You can buy half the stuff that you would normally figure you would see at Walmart or Target, and it's all got their name on it. And they're getting a piece of all of that stuff too. Yeah. So there's a way to make billions of dollars in this industry, but you've got to start with a grassroots campaign. You got to convince a lot of people to watch you a lot of times. Yep. Once you get to that point, then somebody will pay attention to you from the industry.
Exactly. I mean, so, let me jump in here
real quick, Dennis. Speaking of merch and stuff, that was going to be my next question to you guys. Do you have t-shirts and anything like that for sale on your website?
So not yet on our site. we're actually supposed to be setting that up with big records. We do have stuff that we bring with us to our gigs. People buy them. We'll sell t-shirts. But that's coming.
Fair enough. What were you going to say, Dennis?
I've lost my train of thought.
That's okay. Derailed. You know, that's
usually
that
my was, train of thought is the one that gets derailed.
Yeah. I did. I got derailed. I'm sorry.
You know, that was an interesting answer. I mean, I was.
It is interesting.
I think the answer of, you know, you've got the verse and a chorus to get somebody hooked.
Yeah.
That's it. You've got that much time. And it's, you know, for somebody new. And I never really thought about it from that perspective. That's a really good, that's a really great perspective from a band, you know, that's, you know, still very early in their maturity from what they're, you know, getting stuff out as a band. And you guys know, you've been around for a while doing different things, but, you know, I think it's, you know, it's something I don't know that everybody's thinking about. And I think people just put stuff out and it becomes, you know, you get caught up sometimes. And it's amazing to me the things that I see that to me are really, really good that you never go anywhere. Mm-hmm. There's a ton of stuff out there that you go like, man, this is really, really good stuff. And then, you know, the band's together for a little while and then finally like this ain't working. I've got to go, you know, now work it wherever and move on.
That's a major thing. Cause I've been in, 20 original bands in my career. I've been around for a long time. And so a lot of different bands come and go, and that's what it is. I think you get to like an original band has maybe a 2-3 year life expectancy. And I was in this band called Stop the World. We put out a record and it, you know, the band just didn't survive the industry part of it. We fighting over royalties and all and stupid shit. And the band wind up breaking up. As soon as we broke up, like a year later, we start seeing one of our songs was in a 93.3 WMMR radio station commercial. We had another thing. This girl was this girl was playing with herself in a porno to one of our songs. Like and I'm not kidding you. All these things start happening for the band when the band already broke up. So I think that it's what you said. Like, if, you know, the band usually breaks up and the industry usually kicks your ass. It almost like pushes it aside. Cause I mean, it's such an uphill battle. That's part of the reason why I said what I said in the beginning. We wanted to get people to have their life together. We all have jobs. We all have medical insurance. We all have families. We all have things that we're responsible for. And we do this on the side. So it's not like we're all just focusing on this dream that's probably unobtainable, let's be honest. And then that's it then. We quit. We have our lives together, and this is something we do. If it breaks, great. If it doesn't, then we put out good quality music. Hopefully people respect it, our peers respect it. We get to meet a whole bunch of people like you that we would have never met unless we had these songs. And that might be enough. I mean, it technically it isn't, because I put my heart and soul and played for a long time. I should get something out of it. But I think a band has to go into it realistically. And if you do, then this is the reward. And anything more than this is great. You know, if I had something to show my grandkids and go, look, this was Pop back when he had hair, that would be cool. So if you're looking at it from that point of view, we're realistic. So the band was going to stay together a lot longer, I think, because it's so realistic.
That's cool.
Yeah. That's a really great take on it.
But Bill, going to what you were just saying about music that comes up, I won't mention names, but we've had some big time artists on this show that have done side projects that we have just like, this is great stuff. And it just falls on deaf ears. So it's not just even new people that are new bands that come out and put out a great song or a great, you know, EP or album and say, oh, this is great. And it doesn't take off. I mean, there's people that have been in the business, you know, that have connections, have record contracts. And you do these side projects and it just, it's great. And it just doesn't go anywhere because that, like you said, if it doesn't have that chorus or that thing, people just don't pick up on it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just weird. I mean, like I said, it's a very finicky customer right now.
Yeah. But I think to your point though, I think you'd made a comment about pop. Pop is really where it's at because they're, and right. I didn't really think about that till you said that. You made that connection about, yeah. you know, the pop stuff's on TikTok and that's where everything's hot. And that's where, you know, right. so TikTok is the West Hollywood of the 80s.
Sure.
That's right? the Sunset Strip. That's Sunset Talk. but it really didn't dawn on me till we, I mean, as soon as you said that, I'm like, that you're right. I mean, and I don't know because I don't have TikTok, but I don't know how
I don't either.
Yeah, I don't know how many bands you find on TikTok.
I'll tell you how crazy it is. Okay. We put all these, you know, we're writing these songs, we're crafting an EP, we're putting out videos, we're editing things, we're, you know, doing our best to get everything. You just put something up on TikTok, remember? And you were the next morning, you were like, it had 3,000 hits. Went to sleep and woke up the next day.
Yeah. And that, like one had 12,000. I'm like, what the hell?
It's like crazy. It's like, dude, I crafted this video for like a week. I spent like 100 hours doing this thing. I put some bullshit up there and it just got all these hits. So maybe we're overthinking. Seriously. Maybe we're like totally like overanalyzing this whole thing. You know?
It's like our podcast. I mean, we have like 3 listeners and we've been doing this for like, what, how many years now? 8 years? We're trying to figure it out too.
we have a few more.
You need to do a naked TikTok, I guess. Maybe that'll.
No, we don't need to do a naked TikTok.
I'm going to throw up.
Oh, I forgot. It's just us 3. Okay.
This is about as naked as you're getting me. All right. What are you doing? we might have a chance.
Oh my god.
I think we have, he
tells me that all the time.
Yeah. Okay.
Show now a little more skin.
I'm like the one husband that has like, you know, we have like the Neil Giraro Pat Benatar thing because I'm her husband and I'm out there. I'm like, she's like, is this look okay? I'm like,
would look better.
Yeah. She's like, really? I'm like, yeah, go ahead, show them out. You know what I mean? Yeah. I'm a pretty confident guy, but I know like somebody That's goes, funny. Yo, is it crazy that, you know, your wife's in the band? Does it feel a certain kind of way? I'm like, nah, you know, it is what it is. I mean, you got to trust every, you know, you got to trust.
Chip's over there just closing his eyes, holding his hands over his eyes.
I'm thinking that the saying should actually be one good wardrobe malfunction can make your career.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
That is true.
Yeah.
That's been talked about still to the day.
Yeah.
Slip of the nip.
So yep. I had this guy the other night say that to me, and I was like, well, you know, I trust her and everything. And he was just like, oh, because, you know, I couldn't do that with my old lady up there, man. That would be pissing me off. I'm like, dude, you know what, dude? Yeah, I was like, everybody could give it their best shot.
Yeah. That's your that's his insecurity.
Yeah. It's like kind of like
if that's totally what that is.
Then go do it now. You know, well, I'm still young enough, you know. No, but like it's sometimes it could be a challenge when you're in a band with someone you're with, because, you know, you bring it home sometimes, you know, and you're constantly working. And she's like, we've been on vacation and all you've been doing is like working, calling this guy, calling that guy. And I'm like, all right. And then like we played a gig and we had an independent record label come out and see us play. And I was like, well, there's the proof that I was on the thing, you know, I was trying to do something, which he liked us too. I mean, that was another positive thing, but we tend to work a lot. And that sometimes is, you know, we have to find me time, as she says. Yeah.
Yep. Everybody has to do that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That's for sure.
Well, tell our listeners where they can find you online.
Sure. So we are on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, seems like
better
Tuesday.
Be.
Yeah, seems like Tuesday. All music platforms, iTunes, Spotify, Amazon, seems like Tuesday as well. And our website, bigrecords.com.
Dot world,
that's it.
Yeah.
Seems like Tuesday. So there's more to come on that website. Like we talked about the merch and all that good stuff. So that'll be coming hopefully pretty soon and we can get those other big gigs booked. So stay tuned.
Right on. Nice. And on that note, people, visit agesofrock.com, check out our past episodes and our social media links. And until next time, peace out.
Thanks for listening to the Ages of Rock podcast. If you haven't done so already, be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, like us on Facebook, and most importantly, tell all your friends. Remember, you're never too old to rock. Until the next episode, peace out, folks.